Hi, welcome back to another episode of the Autism Everyday Podcast. We are your hosts,
Swati
and Geeta.
Welcome back. So if this is the first time you're here, then just hit pause and scroll back. We are at about 97 episodes now.
90 something for sure.
Yeah, I want to say 97. I think we're almost there. Yeah. So we have 97 episodes of evidence-based information on all things autism.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've heard it, then great, give us a thumbs up. And if you haven't, then kick back, relax, and just enjoy all the episodes we have for you.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful day out here.
It is. It's the sun is out and it's warm for a change.
Pleasantly warm, I must say, right?
Yeah, it is beautiful. There's greenery all around us. We can look at the mountains from exactly where we sit. And there are some really sweet but very lazy dogs sprawled around enjoying the warmth. So, where are we?
We are at Ananda Farms in Chandigarh.
A little away from Chandigarh?
And just being here is everything that this day promised to be, isn't it?
It's beautiful. The foothills of the Shivaliks, it's absolutely, absolutely beautiful. It's been an amazing few days of learning, of understanding what we want to do when it comes to farming, when it comes to nature, the garden. And I want to just extrapolate that and say life.
Yeah, isn't it?
Because I feel like everything in nature is just so linked to the things that we naturally do in life.
Yeah, and also seamlessly applies to our work lives, personal lives, and to autism. Don't you think?
I completely agree, but on that note, I want to interrupt.
Yeah.
And I want to speak for a moment about what brought us here and why we're on the Autism Everyday Podcast talking about Farms.
And context is important.
Context is always important. Set your context. Okay. So, about a year and a half ago, we sat down, I want to say like maybe even 2 years ago, we sat down with a very loaded question, which is what happens to our kids, the kids that we work with at WeCan, once they face out of intervention, which is, you know, our version of the school system, which for us at WeCan is anything up until the age of 18, right? And, you know, while there are very, very thankfully many spaces in and around Chennai, even in the metros, smaller cities, there are places where, and there are people working with this group of individuals on the spectrum. That being said, there just doesn't seem to be enough happening by any means.
Always more of a need, right?
Always more of a need. Yeah. Like, think of it as a vastly underserviced young adult population, right? A population that has spent X amount of time in the system and then graduates into nothingness.
Into nothing. Suddenly there's boom.
Nothing. Absolutely. Vast open space. So, while for the longest time, we also mouthed the phrase that, you know, I don't know, after 18, I'm going to refer you out and we're going to refer you out to whatever is available.
We essentially didn't want to.
We didn't want to put our hands into this.
It seems like a whole different ball game.
A lot of work.
A lot of work as well.
Yeah. Lo behold. No, but honestly, we would, I remember this. We would often refer out families that were graduating or that were close to the cusp of moving out from, you know, intervention into what next. We would refer them out to whatever works for the child or what works for the family. And that was not something that we offered, right? And somewhere along the way, I think there was a need to put our own thought process.
Absolutely.
And our own effort. And I want to say a whole lot of heart.
Into this.
Into this zone. And not just turn away somebody because they're 18.
And then say, well, I don't know. I don't have anything more for you.
Exactly. Like, that to me is the biggest disservice.
Yeah.
That, you know, can be out there when you handhold and then you just kind of let go,
right? Yeah, and there are centers.
It's not to say that there aren't. I think there are lots of centers. There are centers with vocational services, centers with academic services.
Residential homes.
Residential homes.
Plenty coming up.
Up and coming, right, in India. Community centers for day, you know, days spent and activities and stuff. And that left us with something very new to explore.
Yeah. There's still lots more to do there, and right, the feeling that we need to explore and
find so much more.
What else is possible?
Yeah.
So, 3 kilometers from our school campus, we finally found this land.
We did.
We identified this land. That's now our new farm project. So, we envisage our older kids going there and working for a better part of the day. I must admit that, though, that there was no clarity on what this work exactly would be. Though the long-term outcome was clear, engagement, productive engagement of these young adults. But if you ask me what was the detailing that we got into, we really didn't know a lot, right? So we got started with the routine of taking the children to the farm, getting them just used to being there, you know, between this time and this time every day. Getting them to do some very basic stuff that we also knew, like raking leaves, manually pulling out weeds, harvesting vegetables and weighing them, packing them so that it could be sold to interested people and so on.
That was just the beginning.
Yeah.
I think somewhere we recognized that we needed to know more about
farming. We really didn't know a lot. And no, we still can't claim to know more about.
Listen, you can get away with claiming to not know enough. I knew nothing, okay? Negative or zero about farming. You know, how do you do it? What do you do it? When do you do it? What do you need to do it? Like nothing. I have grown up, honestly, in a very urban city. Hardly ever even in a house with a garden, right? So it was completely alien to me. But what we knew is that we needed to be more efficient with what we grew. And we needed to be a lot more efficient with how the kids worked.
And we first needed to understand what they could do.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. We needed to know what the kids can do, what our land can grow, what can we do with what is grown. So that's pretty much where this learning journey started.
Yeah.
Right. And I think somewhere along the way, this journey eventually led us to Ananda Farms and the absolutely amazing power behind it, Manisha Lad Gupta.
Yeah.
I am a huge fan.
I know that. Yeah. I knew that the minute you walked in here.
No, she's phenomenal. Yeah,
she's something else, truly, on a more serious note, right? But walking alongside her for the last few days, listening to the narrative of what has been her journey and just the many little nuances of permaculture that we've learned from her has been really fulfilling at so many different levels.
Oh, it's been so soulful. Yeah. And I just, you know, when we were leaving Chennai at the airport, I picked up this book, right?
And notebook.
I mean, I remember you and asked me. A notebook and a pen. I actually picked up a notebook and a pen from a bookshop and I said, you know, okay, I've carried an iPad, but let's just anyway get this. And you won't believe it. The book is full of notes on what to do, how to do, what do you farm, what are you doing wrong. And I think the biggest takeaway is every lesson on nature and on farming that Manisha spoke about had a correlation to the world of autism and to the world of ABA that we know so well.
Wasn't that fascinating?
It just blew my mind.
Yeah.
So do you feel like just kind of recapping like the main eureka moments for us?
Yeah, and I mean, here she was talking about trees and about permaculture and about something to do with nature, and in our heads we were like, this sounds exactly like what we tell a parent, or this sounds exactly like what we do, or this is what we speak about, or this is what we want to do, and so on and so forth, right?
Yeah.
So the sync between farming, nature, and just autism and ABA, like you rightly said, it was really, really fascinating. And yeah, here are some of the stuff that struck us as significant and were actually eureka moments for us.
Yeah, let's go right. Let's just get into that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of the first things that struck me was when she spoke about structure. And
I think when you're saying structure, you mean like the way a farm looks,
the
right?
The way a farm looks.
Because permaculture farms, they look wild.
They look good, yeah.
They look nothing
no
like...
No structure.
No structure, exactly.
Yeah. Seemingly, there's just wildness, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're more wild in nature and it's almost like, oh, let nature take its course. Whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
Yet there is some order in the chaos, some plant, some natural. Despite which, like, everything in the farm flourishes, both the plant and the naturally occurring, you know, plants and trees and so on. It's about knowing what needs attention and what will thrive as a side effect.
Right.
So it's knowing what to focus on and what does not need to be focused on, but is going to anyway thrive as a result of something else that you're doing. So, I mean, if you look at it in intervention, there has to be structure within the larger chaos. There's seemingly so many objectives to achieve in such a short time when a child comes in with a diagnosis, that the not-so-critical goals often end up being addressed because those seem to be more pressing, like in terms of what the family wants or the schooling system is demanding it and so on and so forth. For example, pre-academics over communication and language. So when you kind of move into doing something that you are trying to engineer and it's not natural, then you really are not achieving a lot, just like the permaculture farm where...
Yeah.
You are planning and then there is also what is naturally occurring. So that's one thing that really, you know, struck me as something significant. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I completely see your point of view, the structure within the chaos.
Hmm.
And, you know, I feel like one of the major things that struck me was that There are some things planned in the farm, much like we plan some things when it comes to a child with intervention. And then nature also takes its course, and we call that the trajectory of autism itself, the child's learning trajectory.
Yeah.
So no matter what you do in terms of intervention or in terms of ensuring certain goals are covered, you also have to make leverage for the fact that they have their own trajectory.
Yes. Yes.
It's not as simple or as complicated as saying, listen, I've put my child down for the best evidence-based intervention that is available.
Mm-hmm.
You are also forgetting that nature also takes its own course. And that, I think, for me personally really stood out.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful parallel between nature and what we try to do with intervention.
Absolutely. And the other thing that, you know, I quite enjoyed listening to was when, I'm going to call her MLG because I know that's how she refers to herself. but she was talking about stress in trees and learning to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
So we raised a question about some trees that we have.
We have some on our farm. On our farm. Yield any fruit.
They don't yield any fruit and they should yield fruit. Mm. They are fruit-bearing trees. And they look lovely, but they just don't bear any fruit. And, you know, obviously we were looking forward to enjoying the fruit and it's been about 8 years now and there's no fruit. So we asked her, we said, you know, why do you think this happens? And MLG brought up this analogy of how you've got to push limits and ensure that there are circumstances that you create where the plant knows that it's got to do better. Or in other words, it's got to keep growing.
Mm.
So she spoke about creating challenges for the plant and not treating it like a cushy bachelor, okay? So not giving it everything it needs on time, which is food, water, a very comfortable life, but creating situations where they work hard to earn their keeps. And I'm telling you, the minute she spoke about this, I was completely blown by the analogy. But the second thing that struck me was, when a parent comes to us and says, you know, but my child doesn't work for any reinforcer. My child does not have play skills. My child does not want to play with any of the toys. There is a problem. There is an actual issue there where you are giving your child, or even worse, I mean, I have to point this out because feeding is a personal favorite.
Feeding, yeah.
I was going crazy, to talk about, crazy passionate about feeding and something we speak about at great length. But when a parent comes and says, you know, my child doesn't eat. My child just will refuse to eat this food. Well, it's also maybe because
you are giving your child every single thing that he wants. Yes. If he doesn't eat a particular food, then you immediately whip out those exotic pancakes with the maple syrup.
Blueberries
and maple syrup. Okay, touchy topic, but blueberries and maple syrup on top and chocolate on the side. Don't forget.
Because child loves it.
Child loves chocolate and they get sugar with every meal.
And surely he's going to eat that.
He will eat it. But here's the truth. If you are going to give in to all these needs of your child, then he's akin to that cushy bachelor. He's not going to be working hard to get to do better. In other words, accept the dosa.
Yeah.
Okay? Very simply put.
Life is one big party.
Life is a big party. So again, to remember to set limits and create situations where you are pushing them to work harder.
A bit by bit, yeah.
Bit by bit, you know, nothing crazy, but measurable steps to do better, essentially, right?
Yeah, absolutely important. The other thing that I thought about was patience.
Mm.
And realizing it's not the direct fruits, but the indirect ones. Like today she spoke about it, right?
I think she was talking about the
parakeets
that suddenly started visiting her farm.
And the many other species of wildlife, which is the indirect benefit of focusing on restoring the land as opposed to counting the crops harvested, right? So what are we aiming for the kids?
Are we looking at what they learned today, how many words they can write today, whether they can sit in the class? So they have sitting tolerance. The famous word, sitting tolerance. Or are we looking at the global picture, which is the number of situations or scenarios that they can successfully navigate?
Mm.
Can your child actually go to the supermarket? Can your child actually be okay with a change of route when you drop him off to school? Can he be okay with the fact that, hey, your favorite shop is closed today, but we're going to go to an alternate shop, which is going to look very different, right? Or, I'm sorry, today was pizza night, but, you know, the pizza place does not deliver.
Or will mom just decide today, no pizza?
No pizza, mom said no, too bad. And we're going to eat something else, right? So, to really be more specific, I'm going to draw a lot of flack from even mentioning this on the podcast, but I think controversy is a good friend now. So think of the ABA graphs that, your average center in the West or even the Oriental East produces, which is graphs of numbers of times a reinforcer was picked or the number of times a child responded to their name, or the number of times your child successfully, put one piece of the puzzle into the inset.
Yeah.
Right?
Without a prompt.
Without a prompt, right?
Yeah.
While these are great goals, point is, I would rather pick the number of times a child could successfully accompany his parent to a supermarket with zero meltdowns.
Yeah, just buy what the parent needed to and not.
Simple. Yeah. Very simple stuff, okay? Yeah. Or maybe just a parent who could travel without the child, knowing that the friends and family can manage A-OK in their absence. Because really, that's perspective.
That's perspective, yeah.
So again, it's realizing that intervention is what it is, but you're also looking at measuring the indirect fruits of your efforts as opposed to the direct ones, which is akin to the parakeets visiting her farm as opposed to how many apples or whatever grew on the tree. Yeah.
And the indirect benefits are the ones that sometimes
absolutely count. Absolutely. Look at the number of species of wildlife visiting, right?
Yeah.
So perspective.
And what about the nurture that the support system provides? The grandparent theory. And removing support, or what we call prompt fading. Right? Isn't it your most favorite topic?
It's literally, I cannot tell you how much I want to emphasize on this and quite literally drone on about it. But go ahead.
Yeah, how she spoke about how a moringa tree is planted and grows tall. And, there are other smaller trees that are planted. And this tall tree provides ample but fleeting shade to the ground below, nurturing the ground both with sunlight and shade, giving the little plant time to grow. Crops growing on this ground are fed and cared for by the grandparent moringa, and then the farmer boldly goes and chops off the moringa.
Why? Why does he do that? Right?
But leaving the roots intact.
Remember. Right, right.
Why, you may ask? Why?
Because I think the supports must be removed.
When it is time.
When it's time, so that the young ones are ready to thrive on their own.
And remember, the roots are still there providing all the nourishment. And
from deep within.
From deep within.
Yeah.
Right.
I think this is such a parallel to our prompt fading process, where we teach a child a skill to independence, and then we remove the supports while still watching over the child to ensure that they learn to thrive in the future absence of the adult.
Yeah, you need to let the rope go and you all need the to way. Let them go.
All the
right?
way.
Right? Yeah. And that's the ultimate focus of intervention.
Always.
And what about making smart choices?
Oh, I mean, I can't go on about how this was also a favorite, but I love that she spoke about the cost-benefit analysis, not in monetary terms, but in terms of effort. And outcomes, right?
Yeah, the smart choices that you need to make.
Yeah.
You may not need to focus on teaching your child math, but can you teach him how to work the till at the shop counter or bag something? So he has a place to go and work and contribute and be, and really belong. That's what we want for our kids, right? To be a part of society, to be...
To belong, to wake belong. Up every yeah. day and know
Say,
that...
Hey, this is, I have a job or this is where I go
I need to go here because somebody's relying on me. Yeah. That's it. That's literally it. I think that's what all of us want. To wake up and know that we are needed or wanted somewhere. And I think that just permeates all the way to our kids, right?
Yeah. So, it's what's the amount of time you spend tending to a particular crop? What's the outcome of the process? Does the time spent justify the outcomes? So, translate that into the autism journey. Does the time spent teaching a child a particular skill justify the outcomes? Takes me back to
Peter Gerard.
Yeah. And the things that he says about where should your focus of intervention be, right? And I think at the end of the day, everyone's journey is so different. I mean, when you look at what we do today and where we come from, each one of us is so different. Yet, we're all here.
I think, we're you and I, you know, we're at the same place. Mm. But our journeys are very, very different, right? And where we've come from is so dramatically different. But I think wherever you are, whether it's in full bloom, or ready to harvest, or you're just breaking ground, it's your place and it's your journey and you've got to own it. And that goes for the kids that we work with.
Yeah.
Everyone's journey is different. Every milestone looks fabulously different. And somewhere in that diversity, somewhere we belong.
Permaculture it is.
For life.
So until next time, we're signing off from the foothills of the Shivaliks. And we will see you. Take care and stay safe.